Welcome to the Sooners Extra Podcast, powered by the Oklahoman. I'm Ryan Aber, joined as always by Joe Masato. The Sooners Extra Podcast is brought to you by Zaxby's. Cure your craving, stop in today, or visit Zaxby's.com. Joe, we've got to start off with the news of the week, which was that Trey Norwood, Oklahoma's versatile junior defensive back, who had played corner most of last year, wound up moving to a nickel and some safety late in the season, hurt his knee apparently in Monday's practice after we had the open portion of practice had ended, the only open portion of practice that we've had so far. He was out there during that, but it appears that Trey Norwood is going to be out for some significant amount of time.
Yeah, it's definitely a big loss. I mean, when you have a knee injury like that, we saw him walk off practice late Tuesday night on crutches. From all indications, and I think everything we've heard, it's iffy, unclear, whatever word you want to use, if Trey Norwood's going to play this season. And he is a guy that, you know, was that solid starter and nickelback going into this season. You've got Trey Brown and Parnell Motley at corner. Trey Norwood played a little bit of corner last year, but I think they were really looking at him to play nickel after Buki Radley Hiles struggled for much of last year. But now Buki, who we will turn to now, looks like that guy who, you know, no one benefits from an injury, but he will definitely have to play more, I would expect.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I wrote about Buki Radley Hiles in the Thursday Oklahoman, that this is a guy who came in with all kinds of hype. And when we've seen, you know, defensive recruits at OU come in with that hype, and in recent years at least, it hasn't quite panned out like that. I mean, Caleb Kelly and Buki Radley Hiles are the two most notable ones that fall under that umbrella. But when you struggle as a freshman, that's to be expected on some level. So let's not write Buki Radley Hiles off just yet. I think he's got a chance to still be a big time contributor. There's things about him that don't necessarily fit into Alex Grinch's mold as far as his speed D, the size and things like that that he wants on the back end. But there's a reason this guy had offers from every program virtually in the country.
Yeah, and I mean, even though he is just a true sophomore coming into this year, you know, I think it's easy to forget because of the games he was benched in last year, the Texas game and the Big 12 championship, and then the Alabama Orange Bowl. He started all 11 games before that, was you know, a key contributor as far as playing time, even as he struggled to really learn the position. 39 tackles. I think the things that stand out, no interceptions. We've been hearing about turnover so much this year. Didn't force any of those. And he, just a guy that, you know, if had he not had the five-star expectations, he probably wouldn't have been singled out as much. But when you come in, you know, from IMG, who have produced so many top guys, you have that five-star label. He kind of had a swagger about him, you know, first guy running out through the tunnel carrying the sledgehammer and everything. He just sort of failed to live up to those expectations.
Yeah, but it seems like he hasn't let the what transpired at the end of last year get him down. Certainly that confidence doesn't seem to have lagged at all, but also it's not like this you know, false bravado. I think from him, he acts like a guy who wants to fix the things that went wrong toward the end of last season, and feels like he's a good fit for what's gone on defensively as far as changes. But with Trey Norwood going down, they're going to need some big playing time from Buki Radley Hiles.
Yeah, and he's an interesting guy. Just, you know, we didn't have a chance to talk to him too much last year as a true freshman, but even when we talked to him earlier in fall camp, he's got all these like sort of catchy sayings, and like you can still see the confidence. And he was like, you know, did not describe last year at all as a disappointment, even though some of the questions sort of focused on that. He seemed to be very much forward-looking. I think you would have some guys who would rely on all of their high school successes in the face of struggle, but he was like, all of that is behind me. The five-star label is behind me. So at least mentally, he seems to be in a pretty good place, or at least he puts on a pretty good show that he is.
Yeah, so the Sooners better hope he is, because with Trey Norwood going down, that certainly leaves them in a precarious position at nickelback, because there's not a whole lot of other options there. There's Trey Norwood and Radley Hiles were the two primary guys that were working in that spot. Now they can move somebody over, but considering the lack of safety depth, at least experienced safety depth that they have, it's a little dicey situation. In the spring, the two guys that they had going there, in addition to Norwood and Radley Hiles, were Jamal Morris, who's a true freshman safety who they really like, but you know, not sure how quickly he's going to be able to contribute, and a walk-on, Caleb Murphy, who's a redshirt freshman from Colleyville, Texas. So they might have to shift somebody over and at least get them ready just in case.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm higher on the safeties than I would think, just looking at the options that they have. I mean, I don't think it would be a shock to see a guy like maybe Justin Broyles shift over and help out at the nickelback. Patrick Fields is someone we've heard a lot of hype on, so maybe he's a guy that they want to stick at safety. But like, what about like Chance Sylvie or Delarian Turner-Yell is perhaps potential possibilities there?
Yeah, I think those could be possibilities. You know, Robert Barnes is a guy who's played a pretty fair amount over the last couple years. He's healthy. I think his skill set playing both safety and corner could allow him to step in and play that nickel position and be okay there. So it's going to be really interesting to see and really interesting to hear when we talk to Lincoln Riley a little bit later this week and talk to Alex Grinch next week, what they plan on doing at that spot, because it's an important one in the Big 12 to have a solid nickel there. And we've seen some pretty good play from the Sooners when they had Stephen Parker there for so long. But since then, it's been a little rough going, and seemed like Trey Norwood had added a little stability to that spot. But now that's gone.
Yeah, and again, for Norwood, still waiting to hear anything official on him. We did ask an OU spokesman after practice, and no word yet. So maybe that's something we find out, you know, by the end of the week, early next week, maybe.
Yeah, I talked to some people that were close to Norwood, and there still isn't a definitive injury. They fear that it's an ACL tear. But also, they've got to wait until some swelling goes down before they can fully test and things like that. But it does look like Trey Norwood is going to be out for an extended period of time. Now, not only, though, does it affect the nickel spot, and obviously we talked about the safeties, but it also really affects your cornerback depth. Because of Norwood's versatility, he played mostly corner last year until Radley Hiles got banged up and you know, sort of got benched there at the end of the season. But they had three guys they felt good about, and now that brings us down to two with Trey Brown and Parnell Motley back there.
Yeah, and, you know, I think those are the obvious guys who are going to start from day one with Trey Brown and Parnell Motley. Just looking at other options, Jordan Parker's sort of a mystery at this point, I think, of where exactly he's going to slot in.
I think he's playing corner right now. But that'll be interesting to see if he's able to get up and be one of those guys in that rotation. Now, the freshman probably the guy outside of Motley and Brown that's garnering the most attention there right now is Woody Washington, who they appear to be really, really high on, the true freshman from Tennessee.
Yeah, Washington's one. And then as far as redshirt freshmen go, Miguel Edwards played in four games last year. I think he was one of those guys where he met that threshold of still maintaining a year of eligibility. But him playing in four games, to me, any freshman that plays in four games, the staff likes him probably and wants to see him get some game action. And they also like him so much that, you know, maybe he's not good enough to contribute for a whole season like, you know, guys like Deshaun White were last year, but he's good enough to play in four games and they want to maintain that extra year of eligibility.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting to see if a guy like Starlin Baldwin is able to work his way in and find some playing time. Baldwin was a guy who right now is banged up. When we he missed all of last year after having a preseason injury But he was a guy that Lincoln Riley talked about before last season as a guy he thought had a real chance to contribute. When we went out to that open portion of practice the other day, Baldwin wasn't dressed out, which they need him on the field as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I think with him, it's just his, you know, early career so far has been defined by injury. It seems like every, you know, Lincoln Riley is, I think, actually doing a better job of telling us at the beginning of every press conference of, you know, who the injury guys are. And Starlin Baldwin, I think, has been named on just about every one of them so far.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens there there in the secondary for the Sooners. It'll be a big topic for us. We're going to take a break right now. I'm your host, Ryan Aber, alongside Joe Masato from the Oklahoman, and this is the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. Welcome back to the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. I'm Ryan Aber with Joe Masato once again, and Joe, we got to talk Jalen Hurts. I think we should have a dedicated segment every week to Jalen Hurts. But one of the things we've noticed being out at practice, three times so far to this point, we're speaking on the Thursday afternoon, is that Jalen Hurts is the last player to leave the practice field. And a lot of times, really until Tuesday night, I think he was out there with Mykel Jones, if I'm not mistaken. But the other couple times he's been out there, he's been out there by himself with a staffer and been the last player by far to leave the field.
Yeah, it's not especially been close. I mean, we talked about this a little earlier in the last pod, but he's definitely carved out that role of being we don't know who the first guy in, because we don't get there at the beginning of practice every time, but we do
maybe
know who
we should start getting there at the beginning of practice, which means maybe you should start getting there at the beginning of practice, Joe.
And then wait for all those hours to see first guy in, last guy out. We can confirm that he is the last guy out. He's been out there even without coaches or anything. It's funny because when they walk off the rugby fields where they've been practicing for fall camp, there's a table set up with some of the trainers, and every guy grabs a little like smoothie on his way out. So those people are all standing there waiting for Jalen Hurts to come off the field so he can get a smoothie. But he's made it a point, I guess, to do this. And what I would really like to know is if this is something that he's done his whole career, or if this is like a cramming session after every practice being the new guy.
Well, I get the sense that it's a little bit of both. I think hearing from folks down at Alabama that Jalen Hurts was definitely that get there first, leave last type of guy. But also talking to his teammates at OU, they're saying that this is just who they've come to know as Jalen Hurts, and two, that this is sort of what he has to do in order to catch up in a pretty condensed span, 7 months. CeeDee Lamb, actually for the story I'm writing for Friday's Oklahoman, talked to him about it, Jalen Hurts, and he said he comes in and he never knows enough. For him, it's always, what do I have to do on this? What are you doing? He said, a guy like that, you can't do nothing but help. Me, I'm going to help him out. Him being so open to me is great on my part. So it seems like that Jalen Hurts' work ethic is certainly raising eyebrows among his teammates and endearing him to them, and also the way that he's really embraced guys like CeeDee Lamb, who is, you know, almost certainly going to be his number one target, is going to be beneficial for the Sooners.
Yeah, and I think that quote says a lot when you have a graduate transfer who is, won a national championship, was 26-2 as a starter, and then you've got a guy who's saying that he comes in and he never knows enough. So I think it's good for OU that, you know, obviously he needs to learn a new system, but he seems very open to learning. And just in our limited interactions with Hurts, it seems like, I guess from a national media perspective, that he was almost like too good to be true. Not necessarily on the field, but just the way he composed himself. But so far, I would say he's pretty much living up to those expectations.
Yeah, it's really interesting, you know, watching Jalen Hurts on the practice field, the limited time we have with him, although it's been more than anybody else, just because he's out there when we're actually talking to coaches and stuff, and it's real easy to peer over there at the other field and see what's going on. But also talking to Jalen, the limited times that we have, and his teammates, just this is a different kind of guy. This isn't, you know, Baker Mayfield or Kyler Murray, both of whom had certainly very impactful personalities. Jalen Hurts' personality is much, much different. He's much, much more of an old soul. I think Neville Gallimore said that they bonded over their shared love of 80s and 90s R&B music. They like the, gosh, I can't believe I'm saying the old school music when I'm talking about 80s and 90s, but the fact is it is, because we're over 20 years old by this point, 30 in some cases when you go back to the 80s. So, but this it's a different kind of guy. This isn't this guy doesn't have the outward swagger that Mayfield and Murray had. It's just sort of a quiet confidence, a quiet ability to lead that's much different from either of those two. Not saying that either of the styles is better than the other, but it's just different.
It's fascinating, like, for me to, like, read and write about these guys' personalities, and I wasn't here like you were to cover Baker, but just hearing the stories of all the differences between Baker and Kyler. Both of them had that swagger, but in very different ways. Baker was much more outward with it. But Kyler, I think we really started to think at the beginning of the season, okay, this guy is very quiet. He's not going to do anything. Then, like, he was pretty cocky toward the end of the season in sort of a quiet, subdued sort of way.
Yeah, it was completely different from Baker Mayfield, who was just outlandish and in your face with everything. But Kyler Murray was not lacking in confidence, and he certainly showed it and showed his personality both on the field with the way he carried himself, and also off the field with something you wrote about last year, his fashion sense and things like that. And I think also the way that he handled and navigated through the baseball question was unique. But this is certainly a unique situation with Jalen Hurts transferring from one just massive program to another. You know, it's pretty unprecedented, and certainly it seems like Hurts is about the best guy to pull it off.
Yeah, and I just get the sense that, you know, if we thought Kyler was quiet, I think Hurts is going to be even more quiet. I mean, part of it, I think, is coming from Alabama, where there's so much attention on you at all times, and knowing that, you know, if you don't say much, there's nothing that can really be said about you other than the way you play. And it's cliche to say, like, you know, let my play speak for itself, but, like, Jalen Hurts seems to epitomize that.
Yeah, there's little doubt about that. And I wonder, and Joe, this sort of veering off into story budgeting territory here, but I mean, I'd be fascinated to talk to people at Alabama, especially those that were there when Hurts first arrived, and then also folks down at Channelview High, and see how this personality came together. Is it something that came together you know, when Jalen Hurts was really young, or is it something that sort of was molded by Nick Saban and the process that he has there? And it'd just be fascinating to see the roots and the origins of this old soul guy that we see when we talk to him.
Yeah, it's worth a look, and it's a story that hopefully we will definitely tell soon. But just making a guess, I mean, I think it might have started even before Alabama, just because I talked to a reporter who covers Alabama, and he said that no one, you know, everyone sort of had trouble getting in touch with Hurts' family, and no one from that side really talked a ton, even though his dad is the head coach at Channelview High. But it just seems like, you know, that they, you know, aren't going out of their way to say glowing things about Jalen, that it's just maybe just all pretty quiet. I don't know, but I think it's definitely something we need to explore.
Yeah, it's a fascinating topic, but we're going to take another break before coming back for the third and final segment where we take some questions. We're going to debate a couple things, but please be sure to bookmark RedRiverRivalryRadio.com. I appreciate the name of that, but it's really tough to say. RedRiverRivalryRadio.com for Oklahoma Texas Week as we launch a 24-hour, 7-day-long pop-up radio station celebrating the historic rivalry between the Sooners and Texas. We'll refer to it as Oklahoma Texas here. We know our buddies down in Austin call it something different, but we look forward to going live October 5th in preparation for the October 12th showdown. I'm Ryan Aber, and this is the Sooners Extra Podcast presented by Zaxby's. Welcome back to the Sooners Extra Podcast brought to you by Zaxby's. Cure your craving. Stop in today or visit Zaxby's.com. Once again, I'm Ryan Aber here with Joe Masato. And Joe, we're going to do some mailbag questions. And most of the stuff that we've got today is talking about predictions and looking toward the season. And we're going to tie this into some of the things that we've got cooking as well. But let's start off with who is your newcomer of the year on the Sooners? And let's go ahead and throw out Jalen Hurts, because I think everybody would say him.
You're putting me on the spot, because Jalen Hurts is the easiest answer to that question by far. Oh, man. Well, one guy that maybe this is recency bias because I just talked to him, and I think that there's a lot of moving parts along that offensive line. But I think RJ Proctor is an interesting name to throw out as a newcomer of the year. He's a guy that started for a couple of seasons at Virginia, so he's got that experience already. I think Bill Beedenbow is probably the best offensive line coach in the country. So if there's anyone that can sort of help someone come along and be ready to step in from day one, whether that's starting or not, I think RJ Proctor is probably going to be, I think he's going to have a role on that offensive line.
And that's a really good choice, and I'm going to stick on the offensive side, and I'm not going to name one of those receivers because I think it's too difficult to separate them out, although I think there's a really good chance that one of those guys winds up playing a really, really big role in this offense. But I'm going to go with junior college running back Ramondre Stevenson. I think we've seen in the past couple of years how quickly running back depth can fade away with injuries, as Rodney Anderson has gotten hurt, and you know Marcellus Sutton got banged up last year, and on and on and on. So you really need to go at least four deep at that spot to feel really good about yourself. And OU has two that they feel really, really good about in Kennedy Brooks and Trey Sermon, and another in TJ Pledger, who's sort of a change of pace type guy, and I think is going to be really successful. But I think Ramondre Stevenson, at 6'0", 232 pounds, a guy that just had a massive year last year in junior college, rushing for over 2,000 yards on 222 carries, that they're going to need him at some point this year, and I think that he's a guy who's got a chance to really break out.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, because I know that I'm going a few years back here with this, but I was researching a story, and like Dominique Whaley's name popped up.
Yeah, that's actually, so maybe, I almost brought up his name.
Yeah, so maybe he could be step in, you know, with some injuries. I know Dominique Whaley was a walk-on, but junior college guy, so could be some similarities there.
Yeah, although I don't think Ramondre Stevenson worked at Subway at any point over the last year. Although I
cannot confirm.
I found out something interesting, and we're just going to go sort of off on a tangent here. I found out that Chance Sylvie worked at Walmart for a few weeks over the offseason, which is interesting. That a football player had a job during an offseason. I think, you know, there's so much talk about, well, you know, football is their job and things like that.
But year round.
There was a 3-week break there during the summer. And Chance Sylvie took advantage of it with an internship for the career that he wants to pursue, which is along the lines of criminal justice, and would like to be an FBI or a CIA agent. Did some work, and I believe it was loss prevention for Walmart. So I thought that was interesting.
That is interesting, and not to give away any story ideas, but it'd be cool to talk to some guys and find out, like, you know, if that's becoming more common or any other off-season jobs that guys might have.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So that'll be something interesting for down the road. But Joe, Barry and I talked about the schedule a little bit, but let's go back to that a little bit. And what do you think the trap game for the Sooners is? It seems like every year there's one that sort of you wouldn't think of could jump up and bite you, but might be one that could give the Sooners some problems.
Yeah, I think there's a couple candidates for this. I know a lot of trap games might come earlier in the season. I'm actually going to November 16th at Baylor. I think because of the hype that Iowa State's getting, and if that turns out to be true, OU hosts Iowa State the week before that, so it could be a big game. Week after that is TCU. But at Baylor, I think that's going to be a really improved team. I like Matt Rhule a lot. They have good quarterback play. So, you know, at Baylor's given OU some trouble in years past, so I'm going to point to that game again.
Yeah, it has. I think that's a good pick. For all the reasons that you mentioned, that November schedule has a chance to be pretty brutal for the Sooners, as good as the first part of the schedule is, as favorable as it is. Although I'm going to go with one of those games from early in the season, and at the Houston game, for a lot of reasons. One, Jalen Hurts' first game there. You know, we saw a couple years ago in Baker Mayfield, a quarterback making his first start for the Sooners, really got off some shaky ground there and struggled. Samaje Perine gets hurt early in that game. I think that this game, obviously they don't have like an Ed Oliver type defensive lineman, but with the offensive line turnover, with Alex Grinch implementing new things on the defensive side, I think that opener is one to keep an eye on, because Houston, even though they fired their coach, is still in very capable hands with Dana Holgorsen.
Yeah, it's a tough game to start out with. That's a good pick. And I think the only thing that might help them a little bit, even though Alex Grinch was not at OU last year, is to face a Dana Holgorsen offense that they've seen before and might be familiar with. But remains to be seen if, you know, they're running the same exact stuff. You know, it's not like if you switch those first two games around and had South Dakota first, Houston second, I think you'd feel better about the start of the season. But the way it sets up, no rest to begin the season.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think that if Houston was second, I would not think too much of the Houston game. In a lot of ways, not saying that I would pick OU to just roll, but I wouldn't put OU on upset watch or anything like that. But the fact that it's the opener certainly puts it in that category. Finally, Joe, let's go to some of the historical aspects of this program that we're coming out with our special college football preview section here a little bit later in August, and want to sort of talk about that a little bit. And I we've got four categories on our grid, picks grid that we do. The first one is all-time best player, and I think this is one that can serve as a debate a little bit more than maybe some of the other ones that we've got listed.
Yeah, I think, let's see, you're just looking at our grid. So three of the four of us picked Baker Mayfield. You are the one outlier, so I'll let you explain that here in a second. But, I mean, maybe I'm letting my age show a little bit by picking Baker Mayfield. But everyone knows the story. Don't have to get into the whole story, beginning from shows up, surprises Bob Stoops, walks on, turns into a Heisman Trophy winner. But, yeah, so I went with Baker Mayfield, but who did you go with?
Well, I went with Leroy Selman, and I think that Baker Mayfield is a fantastic choice, and you can certainly more than make the case for Baker Mayfield as the best player in OU history. But to me, the era that Selman was in, just the absolute one-man wrecking crew that he was along the defensive line, is something that changed those Sooners teams. And they had a lot of great defenders on those teams, but Leroy Selman was heads and shoulders above everybody else. I think that gap between Leroy and the other players, not only on that team that were really good, but the other, you know, players at that position in college football at the time, was what sort of leads me to pick Leroy Selman and stick with Leroy Selman. Although, like I said, Baker Mayfield's a fantastic choice to finish, what was it, top four in the Heisman Trophy each of his 3 years as starter. So it's hard to argue with either of those guys, but to have a 1-2 like that at a program is pretty good. I don't think, and I'm not going to give anything away here, but I don't think this is going to engender the amount of debate that the OSU list will engender, especially at the top. But Baker Mayfield versus Leroy Selman for number one is a heck of a battle.
It's a good debate, and I think it's interesting because prior to Baker Mayfield, there really was no debate. I mean, you asked any member of the media, any fan, and I think Leroy Selman was an automatic, who's the best Sooner of all time.
Yeah.
Now it's not automatic.
No, which also brings me to this. Like, I understand that the statues are left for, you know, historic head coaches and for Heisman Trophy winners, but to have a statue of, you know, and Billy Vessels and Steve Owens and Sam Bradford are all fantastic players, Jason White, but to not have a statue of Leroy Selman is pretty incredible.
It is, yeah. You know, that's something that I would expect at this point. I mean, maybe something's in the works. Hasn't there been some talk about that? Or
well, South Florida, I believe, just unveiled a statue of Leroy Selman, who was their athletic director for a while. But as far as I know, there haven't been any definitive plans in Norman, but that's got to happen at some point.
There's plenty of room. Obviously, you're not putting it in Heisman Park, but there's other places on campus that could have a statue of Leroy Selman.
Whether it's just him or whether it's all three of them, because this collection, you know, Leroy, Dewey, and Lucius, has got to be certainly the first family of OU football.
Yeah, and it's got to be one of the greatest trio of family members to ever play the sport.
Yeah, anywhere.
Yeah.
So hopefully that'll happen at some point. We're running a little bit long here, but we want to – one more, Joe. All-time biggest win for the Sooners.
Well, again, not to give away some of the the stuff we'll have coming up in the Oklahoma for our college football preview section, but 2000 Florida State, that national championship game, that was the unanimous pick. And I think in a program that is one of the most winning programs of all time, there's obviously a lot of chances. But I think I see that, at least. Again, you know, that was the first time I really started to pay attention to OU football. And to me, that marked the new era going forward. Bob Stoops leading into Lincoln Riley. Everyone still to this day looks back at that 2000 win because, though they've played for it since, still have not won it since then.
Yeah. And I went with that same game. I tried to sort of be contrarian. I tried to think about the other games, you know, the win over Penn State in the mid-80s that won them a national championship, and on and on and on. But the fact is, OU has only played for and won one game that was a definitive national championship game, and that was 2000 Florida State. You know, they've been in the national championship game since then and lost, haven't made the college football playoff national championship game. But, to me, that's what makes that Florida State win, so big. And also the fact that it was the signal that OU was back, for good. And I know there's a lot of rumbling about, you know, Bob Stoops not being able to win, other championships, but the fact is, there's no program in college football that has been as consistent as Oklahoma over the last 20 years. and that really heralded that era.
Yeah, and I think now people will look back fondly on that because everyone can say, remember when OU had a dominant defense? And I think the 2000 team and couple years following that were probably some of the most dominant of this, you know, recent last few decades of OU football.
Yeah, goodness, that defense was good with Torrence Marshall and all of those other guys on it. But we better not talk about that because we'd be here for another hour. So we're going to wrap it up. That's it for the Sooners Extra podcast. Thank you so much for listening. You can reach out to us. The best way is on Twitter at @RYAber or to Joe at?
Yeah, at @Joe_Masato. That's two S's and two T's in Masato.
Or email either of us at raber@oklahoman.com or at @JMasato. Two S's, two T's.
That's right.
At oklahoman.com. The Sooners Extra podcast, as always, is presented by Zaxby's. Cure your craving. Stop in today or visit zaxbys.com. Thanks, and we'll see you next week for another episode of Sooners Extra.